The Mike Missinelli Show.
Mike Missinelli, 97.5 FM, Philly's first FM sports station. We on an uneven playing field, top of the totem pole. 97.5, Mike Missinelli Show. Si, senor, we numero uno. And internationally large, just like a sumo. 2-6, Monday to TGIF. Mikey misses the Philly, where Hades the wide clef. A man of the people, ambassador. Put this bull in the ring, they turn the matadors. Our competition completely non-existent. Burning up the phone lines, record number listeners. All the biggest names and the hottest topics. A runaway train in the drive time slot. It's kinda hard to stop us. On remote, standing ovation just like an opera. The best show on earth, I feel that's very proper. The most electric sports talk, ain't no need to shock ya. Turn your radios up, Mike's ready to rock.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a Thursday show, the Mike Missinelli Show on 97.5. The Fanatic was celebrating a couple of things today. One is that this is the third-year anniversary for the show on your TV screen. How about that? NBC Sports Philly, 3 years ago today, we broke through to the TV side. And speaking of NBC Sports Philly, the man who produces the show from that side of the aisle, the TV side of the aisle, is the great Dan Roche. Booney, as you know, we refer to him, and it's his birthday today.
Happy birthday, Booney.
Oh, what a day.
Happy birthday, Booney.
I tell you, this is a monumental day, and we hope everybody joins in the festivities. We're going to keep it loose and light today. But first, I want all the people of Philadelphia, I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to think real hard. The one thing I love about the Philadelphia fans is they know real from fake, right? So I want you to think, and I want you to feel, and I want you to go by your instinct, and I want you to think about whether you believe this year could be any kind of a championship year. We got the Phillies at 5-1 now. And I know, like, it's early in the season, but, you know, strange things have happened. When you get off to a good start, something magical can happen. Now, the Phillies haven't been able to get off to a very good start lately. So 5-1 is significant in that they think they're a good team. Now, you go 5-1, there's 5 wins the first 6 games, you get a confidence. And one of the things I worried about coming into the season was one particular player losing confidence. But he's got the most confidence of everybody right now, and that's Rhys Hoskins. See, I looked at him in spring training, and I go, man, it doesn't look like he's got confidence. It comes into the season, and he's whapping balls around the yard. So that was one of my main concerns. Now, I still got the CF concern. But the pitching so far, the bullpen has held up. The starters have been all right, though it wasn't great yesterday. But I'm wondering if you have any kind of inkling. Like, just feel it, you know? Because you have good instincts when it comes to this. Now, the Sixers, the other contender, obviously. The other contender. So if you're thinking Sixers and Phillies, and you close your eyes, you think real hard, and you go by your instincts, and you feel, and you know when a team is good and when a team is not, is there a chance that there is a championship in our immediate future this year, 2021, whatever team it is, do you feel any kind of a title? And it's okay if you don't. I want to know how many people do. And if you don't, why don't you? If you do, why do you? So we'll go to the crew right away. You feel when a team's good. You can tell. Otherwise, you go, well, they're good enough to do something. But the next level is, yeah, I think something magical is going to happen. I can't explain why, but I think something magical is going to happen. You're feeling it.
I am. I think this is going to be a special year for a couple of teams, but I'm talking about the Phillies right now. I think they're real. See, last year, the terribleness of the bullpen, like the worst literally in 90 years, not just the worst last year, the worst any team had ever had, clouded the fact that this team did some things. They actually, considering how bad that bullpen is, maybe they shouldn't even have been in the mix. But instead, they were in the mix all the way through. And then you come back, Rhys Hoskins looks like he's fixed. I believe it. I believed in him before. Then Kapler showed up. I stopped believing him. Kapler's gone. And last year was a shortened year. He looks like he's back to his old self. See the ball, hit the ball. See the ball, hit the ball. Bryce Harper, let me tell you, if Bryce Harper, with his attitude, the way he plays, if they win something, he will pass Utley as the most popular athlete in the history of this city. That's how much I love that guy. And I didn't love Utley in that way. He checks all the Jimmy Rollins boxes plus the Utley boxes of the playing hard and blah, 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 blah. This team has something, and I think Wheeler is due to finally put it all together and be a true ace. So if you're worried about Nola, I understand. He's still going to be a solid two. But I think Wheeler's about to take the step to be a true ace in the Cy Young mix. I think this team has a real shot to win something this year. I'm in. I'm in six games in.
I'm in, too. I'm in, too. Well, you know what, Mike? I keep thinking about... So when we talked about it last week, I said how there's this camaraderie and this chemistry. But Didi Gregorius, in February of this year, was comparing this year's Phillies team to the 2017 Yankees, who were also managed by Girardi. So whatever he's doing with these guys... And whatever is going on in that clubhouse, it seems to have elevated them to this next level where we're watching, I feel like we're watching a completely different baseball team than last year.
Yeah.
Where it's just, they're finding some sort of momentum or mojo where even when they're down, they're finding ways to bring it back where I feel like last year they would be a little bit more defeated.
Here's the thing that I think joins this whole thing together. I look at a team and I look at how many quote-unquote professionals they have. Because professionals lead you through bad times and calm the waters through good times, right? I look at they've got exceptional professionals on this team. Now, I don't know how it's going to turn out, because at the end of the day, talent's going to win. But Bryce Harper is an ultimate professional. Didi Gregorius is an ultimate professional. Andrew McCutchen is a professional. Now, I hope they can get some input, but we know he's a professional. And JT Realmuto is an incredible professional. And on the bench, that Matt Joyce is a professional. Those professional guys are what makes a team have fiber. So I'm not getting, you know me, I never get ahead of myself. I got to look and see like how I feel mid-season and whether this starting rotation in the back end that gives them anything that can sustain. But, and it just doesn't go to the Phillies. There are two teams right now that you look at and they go, you go, I can't rule them out. I can't rule out the Phillies. I can't rule out the Sixers. But I want to go even further. I want to go in your gut feeling, because you trust your gut, and usually the gut feeling is what is the true feeling. So in your gut, do you see a championship out of the Sixers or the Phillies? Now, we know we're not going to get a championship out of the other two. All right, we can just round that off. We're not going to get a championship out of the Flyers. We've got to live with that fact and accept it and move on. And we're not going to win a championship with the Eagles this year. So, there are two contenders. And I want to know how you feel this year about these two teams. And if you don't think they are championship worthy, or you feel they're not going to win a championship, tell me why. Tell me what you think will happen that would prevent that.
You know, with the Sixers, I still have a lot of faith in the Sixers, because I'm always reminded of what happens when you have the best player on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the Sixers will have against the majority of the teams. Now, the Nets are the Nets. And I'm interested to see how Embiid would counter those guys. Mm-hmm. But I can't say for sure that Harden or Durant, I know Kyrie's not, I can't say whether Harden or Durant are better than Joel Embiid right now. I can't say that for sure. Joel Embiid has elevated his game to the point where it's not a gimme that anybody in the world's better than him in a 7-game series individually. That makes a big difference. Sometimes you win because I got this guy and you guys don't. And that's why the Sixers still have a shot, because Embiid elevated. Now, will it happen? That one, like, I don't think the Phillies are going to win the whole thing. I think the Phillies are a real playoff team. I want to say. The Sixers, we know, is a real playoff team. They're the ones where I go, you know what? With my gut, it just seems guys keep getting all. Durant comes back yesterday, but guess who's now out? Now Harden's out. The Clippers last year had issues like this. They were the best team in the league last year, the Clippers. And they ended up getting tripped up in the second damn round because they never got cohesive. I can completely see that happening with the Nets. They can't seem to get all their guys together, and that's going to matter in a playoff series. They got to know what to do at the end of games. They got to know how they're going to double-team Joel Embiid, for example. I just think the way AD and LeBron are both hurt, I just think the way it's playing out, the fact that Embiid was hurt and it ended up not being a season-ending situation, the sun might just be shining on the city of Philadelphia right now. I think there's a real chance. I'm not just, and I'm critical very often. I think there's a real chance.
Well, we'll see what happens. And just one more note on that, the professional thing. I'm not trying to downgrade anybody because I look at the Braves. Freeman is an absolute professional. Like, he might be
for sure
the league's most professional
yes,
guy.
For sure.
But the rest of the Braves, I mean, they're talented. Don't get me wrong. There's a difference between talent and being a professional with talent. And Acuna's out of his world crazy good, but he's not a professional yet. Albies is kind of getting there. Ozuna, maybe. Darno's a professional. But the Phillies, I think, out-professional the Braves. And if you look at the Mets, and who on that team is you really look at and go, they don't have David Wright anymore. Like, they've got guys that can play. Conforto might be a professional. Who else? Like, Alonso's not a professional yet.
He's still
kind of young. Lindor's a professional.
He's a real pro. Shows up every day.
Yeah. All right. So Lindor would be in that category. And if you go to the pitching staff, obviously they're DeGrom's a professional, but Nola's a professional and Wheeler's a professional.
Yeah.
So you don't know about Thor.
Thor, you don't know about Syndergaard.
Yeah.
You don't know about him year to year. I was talking about this with Andrew before the show.
All right. We'll talk about it. And also we're going to do a little movie thing today because I started thinking about movies and I started thinking about, what movies would make your top 20? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw a movie at you, and you go, yeah, that's in my top 20.
I got
a bunch of movies here. I want to see if they qualify for your top 20. Now, some of them may be in your top five. So you would go, oh, yeah, definitely, that's in my top five. So for the record, my top five goes between, it's more older school than newer school, and my top five will never, I don't think, ever be replaced because it's The Godfather, it's The Sting, it's The Good, Bad, Ugly, which go back in time a little bit, it's Pulp Fiction, and it's The Deer Hunter. That's a five of mine that are, to me, classic, never will be able to be moved out of those areas. They're just so full as movies. That's why they're top five. But in modern, these are all more modern day movies that are very worthy of your top 20 that I'm going to throw at you.
So you're doing favorite, not best necessarily?
No, good. These are all good movies. I want to know if they're in your top 20, though, because there's more than 20 that I have here.
Oh.
So they can't all be in your top 20. And it's, again, you just go by feel. You go, yeah, that's in my top 20. Or, good movie, but not in my top 20. See where I'm going with that?
I got it. Totally got it.
All right. Now, here's the problem with that, because if we get more than like 20 in your top 20, you can't be in your top 20, you know? So these have to be definite hits, definitely in my top 20. And I might reduce it to top 15 after a while.
All right. I'm excited about this.
All right. I'll throw one at you just for giggles. Gladiator.
Not in my top 20.
Not in your top 20. Yeah, that's interesting.
You said it's
not for me.
Okay. Like, really good. Right,
that's interesting.
Not in my top 20.
No, that's what I'm going for. So yeah. Stuff like that is not in your top 20.
Which is, I don't know why, because I really, really, really like that movie.
You go by feel. It didn't feel top 20 to you.
It didn't.
All right, that's the idea of this whole thing. All right, Natalie, if I give you Saving Private Ryan.
Nah.
That's not in your top 20.
No.
Really?
I mean,
okay.
it's a fantastic movie.
All right. See, these are kind of things that this is interesting. This is going to be an interesting reaction
for
people.
You know, my qualifiers are probably different.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you.
A lot of gore for me.
Because a lot of people would go, yeah, that's definitely top 20. Let's say even Private Ryan. Right. Is that top 20 for you?
I got to go by feel. No.
No.
Yeah, see?
But again,
it's a great movie.
That's a better movie than Gladiator, and it should be.
Yeah.
But since we didn't know this was coming.
You didn't. I kept it from you because I wanted to get your fresh reaction.
In my mind, it's not. It probably should be.
Right.
And like maybe if I was writing it down physically, it would be, but on feel, no.
Okay. All right. We'll have some fun today with this. 610-632-0975 is how you get in. Mike Missinelli Show back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
Back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
It's a little something we call Nat's News.
That's right. First, I have this really interesting story. So this man was packed in a crate in 1965 and traveled overseas because he wanted to get home. So now he's looking for the two Irishmen who helped stuff him into the wooden crate and ship him home to the UK in the mail. He was working in Australia when he and two buddies hatched and executed the unconventional plan. He said, the problem is at the time we made an agreement that it would be secret because none of us expected any publicity. The idea was I'd get to London and I would get out of the crate and disappear and go home and nobody would be any the wiser. But he's writing this book now. It's called The Crate Escape. But what happened was he was working in Australia and he became desperately homesick, but he couldn't afford to get home because he would have to pay back the company that he was working for. So the two guys that he worked with put him in a crate and mailed him. They thought he was going to the UK, but he ended up in Los Angeles. So they covered the crate with labels that read fragile, handle with care, this side up. It was scheduled to fly from Melbourne to London within 36 hours. However, they put it on the wrong plane. He was in there for 5 days. He said, it was terrifying. I was passing in and out of consciousness, lacked oxygen. There was all these stopovers, airport crew at one time. He was left upside down on a tarmac, sitting on his head for 24 hours because there wasn't enough room in the crate to turn around. You know, so he considered
this. I mean, come on.
This actually happened.
This guy wouldn't be desperate enough to scream out. He's on his head for 24 hours. He's like claustrophobic. So, no air's getting in. I mean, come on, you got to give it up.
Where does he go to the bathroom? Five days?
So they put him in there with a pillow, a flashlight, and a bottle. He was only supposed to be in the crate for 36 hours, but then he got on the wrong plane.
That's not the only bathroom I'm talking about. The bottle doesn't help with that.
So what happened was he managed to turn on his flashlight and he was in an airport and a worker finally noticed and peered into the side of the crate and they thought it was a dead body. Well, so here, I mean, he was not dead or a threat, so he was free to go home and Pan American's airline flew him home first class.
Well,
in 1965.
The crate, how's the crate letting air in if it's all sealed up? And because if it's not and you have cracks in the wood, people can see into it.
I mean, I guess he's been really quiet.
And I think they put packing stuff around. Those aren't airtight. They're all watertight. They're just like nothing's going to fall out.
And this is like 1965. But yeah, they tried to get him the whales. And it didn't go well. He ended up in L.A.
I'm going to read that.
Isn't that a cool story? But
yeah,
now
it's
he's
a book.
Yeah, he doesn't remember the names of the Irishmen who helped get him in the crate.
I wonder if they're still alive.
That's what he's trying to find out before the book comes out.
Is this somehow against the law?
Yes.
So, there's no legal ramifications here.
They didn't know.
60 years ago.
Yeah, they didn't know. But apparently he was treated really well when he got here, and he loves America. And
wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Two salute to the man.
I know. So if you know the Irishman, if they happen to be in Philadelphia and you pack this guy in a crate in 1965, look him up.
You know, you think those guys would be curious to know what happened to the dude.
His name's Brian Robson.
Did they get a return ticket? What did they do? Send him the cheapest way possible?
I guess.
Did they have receipts back then?
But that was the 60s. Like, you couldn't go on the internet and do a...
Yeah,
you know.
I guess not.
Yeah. Can you imagine Australia to Los Angeles in a crate? At least he survived.
That guy's got the stamina of the strongest man in the world for doing that.
He does.
Head for 24 hours, I'm going,
that's insane.
I'm squawking.
So, there's a giant lizard that caused some issues at a 7-Eleven in Thailand. Did you guys see this? The picture is insane.
I saw the lizard climbing up the shelves.
A 6-foot Asian water monitor made its way into the mini mart, and you can see the video. He's walking through the store, and then he climbs up the shelves, and everybody's shouting, and the animal knocked down the grocery items, and it came from a nearby canal. And then went into... I don't understand how it got into the 7-Eleven.
Because it has automatic doors.
Oh.
Had automatic doors.
Right.
So what you going to do? We going to stop
it? Little lizard paws hit the automatic doors.
It's 6 foot.
It's 6 foot. It
looks
heavy,
like Godzilla.
Yes, it's heavy. It's like a man crawler. It's like a man crawler.
I guess there's nothing you can do about it. You just got to stay and watch the thing, right?
Yeah, I guess. What are you going to do? Confront it?
And they're native. I Googled that.
Yeah.
They're there. Like, they're not usually in a store.
Yeah.
But it's not strange for one of those to be
for a giant in that area?
In that area. There's 8 different kinds.
I saw that he was knocking everything over.
I know, and he's just meandering his way up the shelves.
Now, is that
he's actually kind of cute.
Is that a lizard dangerous?
They're
dangerous. So they had to call the lizard people?
Yeah. I guess he wanted a Slurpee.
Why get so hot?
You heard our conversation yesterday. You get a prepackaged sandwich.
Yeah.
Try it out.
Taquito.
Or a burrito. Or a taquito.
I heard about this burrito. Yep. Let's check it out. I'm streaming.
So, third story for the day. Khloe Kardashian causing some controversy on the interwebs. She had posted.
Annalie Cloud that. Any picture?
Well, that's not what the issue of it was. The issue was she was unhappy that it was posted accidentally and that it wasn't photoshopped and that it actually showed her real body. So she had it taken down for copyright reasons, which Twitter can remove it since I guess they have some sort of technology if you file a copyright claim against them to take the photo down. But now she's saying that it was posted by mistake and everybody's scrutinizing her because they're saying, you know, you try and promote body positive images for women and young girls, but you're taking down the only natural photo of yourself that's out there. So she released a statement today, which people are all up in arms about. And she's saying, you know, you don't know what it's like to be constantly scrutinized by by the public. And I want to control the way that I look on the internet.
I thought she had undergone a transformation body. First of all,
her body looks incredible in the unphotoshopped one.
Let me ask you this question because she does not look like the same person.
No,
no.
I've seen these commercials that she's on.
Yeah,
I go, that's not the same person that I remember. Like, what happened? What'd she do?
She got a lot of work done in her face. A lot of fillers. Probably her lips. And stuff. And
yeah, she looks like a completely different woman.
Yeah, so.
And that's the problem with this whole thing.
Yeah, so that's why I brought it up, because it's very controversial. Now everybody's saying, well, if you want to be body positive, then you should leave your bikini photo up, because that's actually what your body looks like. But she's upset because it doesn't look as perfect as it does in other photos.
Well, of course, it's Kardashian.
But here's the problem, though. She's writing this forever thing. Like, you would have thought it was the damn I Have a Dream speech. How long the thing she has to write about a photo going on Twitter. That's the first thing. Oh, you have a dream, Khloe? That's step one. Step two of it is she's living up to the body image of her own family.
Yeah.
So she's like, Kim is the one. Kim could have came out and said, hey, we want to be body positive. We want to do Kim's body type at the time.
Yeah.
For Caucasian people was rare. Black people already like that, but for Caucasian people was outside the norm.
Yeah.
She chose to get work done, to Photoshop, to do all things, to put out this unnatural, this unrealistic image.
Mm-hmm.
She's coming in the wake of that. She could have, Khloe could have went to college and became an accountant. She chose to go into the same field as her sister, who's doing things that are unrealistic.
Yeah.
And then is mad about people, about the unrealistic thing that her family set up. And now you do a How You Have a Dream speech about it?
Yeah.
Like, this has got to stop. Like, the Kardashians must be stopped.
Well, here's how I deal with the Kardashians. I don't pay them any attention. I don't pay them. It doesn't matter what they do to me. I just saw her on a commercial. I go, wait a minute. That's not the one I remember with Lamar Odom.
No, what I mean is they have millions of followers, and most of them are female. And it's not about the men. It's about the females. So what happens is
it's women. Sickness.
Yeah,
really,
Kardashian
thing is a sickness upon America.
Well, I think it's kind of dwindling down now because people are sick of it. But initially, I was one of those people who appreciated Kim when she came out because, you know, I have a little bit of a curvier body type. So I was like, oh, wow, look, she's not 6 foot tall and weighs 100 pounds. Like,
right.
That's not what I look like, you know, so I appreciated
initially.
It.
Right.
Yeah. And then it kind of just went in this way where completely unrealistic. They did. They did a disservice to their fans.
Wait, she's with Tristan Thompson, right?
Yeah, they're back together.
Okay.
I mean, he cheated on her.
With her little sister's best friend.
Well, they didn't. That was apparently at a party. But on the show, he's cheated on her at least 7 times.
Yeah.
They get all mad at the women, and everybody's bad. Not Tristan, by the way.
No.
And then she gets back with Tristan.
Yeah.
So they're mad at the 7 women, but Tristan still walk them up at the house. Yet these people are the role models for the modern era.
No.
I'm telling you, if we don't get rid of these Kardashians, we're in a lot of trouble.
I mean, the show's ending. The show's ending.
They got to go away.
It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's really
interesting. I can't believe it.
I put it in there because I wanted to hear Ty's rant.
Oh my God. You have to hold me to the same standard that my family decided to put out there on their own, unprompted. They call the paparazzi when they go to dinner, and I'm supposed to be the one to be like, oh, poor you. I can't believe this happened to you. Come on.
That's why this made Nats News today.
That's why I used to call him the DMX of Sports Talk Radio.
Yes.
You know, he's got that raspy thing comes out where he's angry, and the Kardashians brought out of him.
You're not. She wrote a long thing, and then there's people going.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, she's a human being. Can you believe that she's going through this?
Yeah. Well,
you mean that she like people were like, "Wow, Khloe, you looked good in that picture."
Yeah.
That's what most people said.
Yeah. Well. All right. That'll do it for Nats News for today. Let's take a quick break. We're back in 3 minutes. I got a Masters update. Oh, Mr. Muscles struggling. Mr. Muscles is struggling. We're back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
So let's talk to the man who covers the Sixers for The Athletic. He joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. He's Rich Hoffman. Hello, Rich.
Hey, Mike.
Rich, what did you think of the KD return last night, and how you feeling about the Nets in the future?
I think they're pretty good, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they're pretty good. I think they're pretty good. They scored a lot of points last night against a team that was not disinterested in playing defense, I thought. But so when we bring it home with the Sixers, how do you think the Sixers now? Embiid came back the first, looked good. How do you think they will look now with this stretch of road games?
Well, I guess the good news is the team that was disinterested in playing defense is the Sixers' next opponent.
And yes.
They've been disinterested in that all year. I mean, they're a fun team because Zion Williamson is really a unique, pretty amazing player. He shoots like 65% from the field, scores 30 points a game, but they don't guard anybody. It's been a weird stretch for the Sixers, Mike, where they, I think at the end of this road trip, they will have been on the road for 20 of 23 days. Mm-hmm. You know, they just had like the short back-to-back in Philly. They did come back today and practice, which I think was a good move. But, you know, like, these games are very winnable. You know, I would imagine Embiid will only play in the Friday game against the Pelicans, and then they're playing against the team that's going to try to lose on
Oklahoma
on Saturday
City. Yeah.
In Oklahoma
yeah.
City.
So that looked like two wins to you?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
All right. Now, Monday at Dallas with a look ahead.
Yeah, that feels like a loss. I mean, that could be a loss. That's a tough game.
Okay. Dallas is playing. Yeah, I can see 2-1 as they go into the Brooklyn game Wednesday.
Yeah, and Dallas is playing better. They have Porzingis back. The one thing I will say about that game in, early February when they played in Philly? The Mavericks didn't have Porzingis, which makes them a little bit easier to guard. And I will say, like, in that game, Ben Simmons did about as good of a job as I've seen somebody do on Luka Doncic all year. You know, you watch Luka play against all these other teams. Like, he played against the Celtics a couple weeks ago. He was just embarrassing them to the point where it looked unfair. So, you know, when Ben Simmons pretty much shut him down for three quarters of that game, it stands out. It's pretty impressive.
Okay. They did drop a player, that guy, it was the throw-in. So that means, I assume, that they are going to sign an opt-out player or a buyout player. Is that what that means to you?
That is what that means. I have no idea who it is. You know, if it's going to be somebody who is at like that stretch five position that we talked about a few weeks ago, or just somebody who's, you know, a wing that they consider to be more close to helping, or closer to helping him than Iggy Brazdeikis was. But yeah, that does seem what's going to happen, and it's going to have to happen in the next little bit, because the deadline for the player being bought out slash waived is tomorrow.
Yeah, so like the only guy that I look at that fits, and I hate the guy, but he does fit, is Kelly Olynyk. Is it reasonable to think that he's going to get bought out, or no?
From everything I've seen, Houston, which, I mean, that's been an organization that since Daryl Morey has left, they've done some interesting things, I'll say, the direction of the moves they've made this year. Not that all of them have been terrible, but they haven't made a ton of sense. Like, he is a very logical guy to be bought out. That team should be looking to lose as many games as possible. Kelly Olynyk, he's not really going to help them anyway win games, so... I all the signs I've seen so far, you know, there hasn't been a word about him getting bought out, but it's very logical that he would move.
Yeah, I mean, it actually works for the Sixers, but if it's not him, what, Ellington?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, Mike Muscala maybe in Oklahoma City, but, you know, it could end up being somebody like Gary Clark or somebody like that. Like, it might be a very underwhelming name.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on which of these guys gets bought out, but there hasn't been a lot of buzz on really any of these guys getting bought out.
Let's talk about the George Hill situation, and he spoke, and he said definitely be back for the playoffs, but, you know, I'd like to get him back sooner than now. What are you seeing here, and what are you hearing?
It certainly sounds like it's going to take a little longer than we first expected. Like, I didn't expect him to play in the first game after he was traded at the deadline. Like, I figured, you know, it might take a week or so. You know, he's got that cast off of his thumb. He's been, you know, he had already been kind of doing conditioning work in Oklahoma City. It sounds like they're going to get him back at some point here, but the fact that they don't have a timeline is, it's taking a little longer than I thought. I'm not saying, like, completely press the panic button, but yeah, I think it's, you know, considering what Daryl Morey said, that he didn't think he would be out for that much longer when they made the trade, it does seem like not having a definitive timeline at this point is a little bit concerning. Like, do I expect that they'll have him back before the end of the season? Yeah, I mean, he said that today. But yeah, it is taking a little bit longer, and you would hope, you know, despite the fact that he's like a veteran player, smart guy, you would hope that you would have him for, I don't know, like 10, 15 games. Like, the playoffs are right after that. It's, you know, you'd like to see some experimentation and him have a chance to gel with his new teammate.
What do you think is reasonable, though? I mean, I'm looking at the rest of the schedule. 10 games would put them, I guess, Atlanta. They have a back-to-back with Atlanta, like, in that area, April 30th?
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, it doesn't sound like it's going to happen in the next week or so. So, you know, you go another week after that, you're getting pretty close to those stretches.
Yeah, I would like to see him against those Milwaukee, with those Milwaukee games, but that doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like, he did also strike an optimistic tone, for whatever that is worth today. Like, I would say the gist of his availability today is, I'm making progress, but I can't tell you when that's going to be.
Yeah,
so, man. You know, make of that what you will. I don't really know.
Okay, we're back to the Ben problem. As you well know. And I know you guys have been asking Doc Rivers, and he's always got the ready. You guys think about more about that than I do, which I think is BS. But what's your read on this lack of offensive aggression? Certainly not what it was before the All-Star break.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, I had a tweet the other day where if you look, it's been like a tale of three seasons for him. You know, he started out, he was pretty unaggressive, and then it was pretty much right when that Harden trade was made, right when those two games against Boston and Philly, it was some of the best basketball he's played when you add in the defense. But then since the All-Star break, I think he's probably been a little bit worse offensively since the beginning of the year. And yeah, I mean, you can continue to ask Doc Rivers this question, and we do as much as possible. And he says that he is way less concerned about his scoring. Like you, I'm not sure he actually
think that.
He can't possibly think that. Really, I can see what he's doing. They never want to go trip the wire here with this guy. So they walk behind it all the time.
Well, and the thing that is slightly annoying from my perspective about those answers is he says, well, he's helping us win in so many other ways. Like, he's a facilitator, all those things. His assist numbers are down. The team offense is down. Like, he's not helping them win on the offensive end of the court in recent weeks. Like, I could see if he was throwing up, 14 assists per game, 2 turnovers, and they were just humming. And, you have guys like Curry and Green just making 3 after 3 that were off his penetration. But that's not what's happening. So, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. All right, so we're at this team's mercy now as we go into the playoffs. I would love to get a better idea what they are with George Hill involved, and I'd love to see what the Nets are with all 3 of them involved. And we've been deprived of this. It's maddening.
Yeah, and like you said at the beginning, Harden, he's not going to play in that game in a week. They said reevaluated at that point, so that's not going to happen. And you just have... It's been pretty funny. Like, the Sixers and the Nets have done very similar things this year where they just haven't had their pieces all together at the same time, but they both continue to play, like, really good basketball. Like, that game in Boston the other night, like, I would say going into that game, I still, in the back of my head, was like, oh, man, could, Boston with, all of the past baggage that the Sixers have against them, they have these 2 good wings. Like no, the Sixers are better than them. They have handled the season completely better than them. And frankly, the other night, that was a 10-point game. Wasn't that close. Yeah. So, yeah, it would be nice to see that. Hopefully we get those Milwaukee games will be pretty good, like you said, towards the end of the year. But, Mike, it could just be a lot of experimentation against teams that they keep beating.
Yeah. All right, Rich, always good to hear from you. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, man. See you.
All right, that's Rich Hoffman checking in, covering the Sixers, of course, for The Athletic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.